Hello and welcome to Astrology Studio for Scorpio for 2021 into 2022. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next 75 minutes or so. Here with a reading of the Scorpio solar chart. Of course, I'm not working with your natal chart, but what I do with these readings can, on a really good day, a little more often than that, demonstrate the power and the relevance of the solar chart, which is a chart with Scorpio rising, oriented with the current transits. And so what we get are a lot of movements related to the solar houses, the houses from the sun, counting. So for example, if we start with Scorpio is house one, Sag is house two, Cap is house three. And this has an odd way of being relevant. And I liken it to, if you can read tarot cards, it doesn't really matter what spread you use or what deck you use, as long as you can read it. And so I respect all the fuss made about the correct birth time until it's used as propaganda against well-written horoscopes and other solar chart type readings. And there's a lovely lineage of some really great astrologers having worked in this system. Anyway, that's it. And should you be curious about like how or why, I'm happy to even take a phone call and go over it or do another presentation about it. But in any event, is this a reading of your solar chart? That is a tuning in to archetypal Scorpio. And this is a huge time for Scorpio in the long range sense of what happens in the history of a sign. And interestingly, there are not a lot of slow-moving planets, really. There are none of the familiar slow movers are in Scorpio. There's a couple lurking far in the background, but Mars is in your sign. And Mars is the classical ruler of Scorpio, which is supplanted by many modern astrologers who use Pluto. And I'm going to have plenty to say about Pluto, and I think that it's genuinely relevant factor for Scorpio. It's just really a perfect fit, but so too is Mars. And the thing about Mars is that it is so much closer to the human realm. It's the closest planet to Earth much of the time. It's likely to have had life on it. As far as I can tell from various different sources, there was some long series of civilizations on Mars, and so it's a world not unlike ours. And I always think of Mars as a reminder of what we could be. And before I start interpreting, I wanted to say one thing I have been just aching to say to Scorpios since I've learned it and relearned it. Which is that, and let's consider whether this says something about you. Our solar system is really version two of the solar system. And I first read this reading Alice Bailey, who has no claim to any scientific knowledge. But then I learned something from astronomers, which is that the solar system used to have about 40 planets, and they smashed and banged into each other and reformed into new, I forget the word they use, agglomeration or some fancy four-syllable word, but that Mars is a leftover from the previous version of the solar system, and quite possibly the only, far as I know, the only leftover planet from the previous solar system, apart from all the debris floating around in various asteroid belts. So Mars has a special place because it is the oldest planet. It is a visitor from very long ago. And yet, so much like Earth, that we have up there a whole diversity of robots crawling around and sending back really cool pictures, assuming that that's true. I have so far not had a reason to doubt it. So the huge astrology that you are under primarily involves Pluto. There's other actors. But the thing that makes 2020 and 2021 distinctive from all other years, going back to the late 1970s, is that Pluto is in an aspect with Eris. So Pluto is the dimension of Scorpio that really brings in the death and transformation element of Scorpio that, you know, people tend to forget about until they are reminded by something. So Pluto is this regenerative factor. It is Shiva-like in that it can do a lot of damage, but then it is always the kind of damage that is rebuilt from and that can lead to improvements. And in the contemporary world, the one thing I think that Jeff Green got right is that Pluto is an evolutionary driver. It is an evolutionary force. It is some representative of the soul's movement to grow and become and evolve, which is all the soul is. That passage from Monty Python, which I have transcribed, where there's the boardroom scene and they're talking about evolution and the soul. And the guy says, well, the soul is not a thing that existed. The soul is a learning process. The soul is a growing process. And Pluto, therefore, to my mind, drives forward a self-actualization property. And it can drive various forms of obsession and things like that, and power hunger and whatever. But ultimately, when you sort it all out, Pluto is pushing us to self-actualize. And there was recently, just a few days ago, right before Mars went into Scorpio, an alignment of Mars getting into the very last of the squares between Pluto and Eris. So when the ruling planet of your sign, modern astrology, it is considered to be Pluto, is involved in one of these really deep, long, rare aspects that, you know, the 1970s, when the hell was that? That's like 45 years ago, isn't it already? 78, this happened. That's about you. That's about the kind of change that is incomprehensible, because who really understands actually the ways of Pluto, and in particular the ways of Eris, this other profound force driving our sense of identity forward, particularly in the digital age. And so when we put together Pluto and Eris now for you, this is about you learning how to adapt to the world as it is today and not the world as it was 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. And just at the end of what I believe were five squares between Pluto and Eris, since they are both ultra-slow movers, the retrograde effect, well, the Earth swinging around the sun, very close to the sun, and then they're like way the hell out there, makes it look like they're dancing around backward and forward, but it's really the Earth that's moving, creating parallax movement. Through the retrograde effect, the first one took place in January of 20. The last one took place earlier this month. And at the moment of that square between Pluto and Eris, Mars shows up so close you could tune an oboe to this particular pitch. And the T-square of Mars, Eris, Pluto, I mean, I don't read other astrology websites. This probably was, I would imagine, easy to misunderstand and easy to scare the bejesus out of many astrologers who would respond to being scared by saying, ooh, you know. But no, the precision of this is the beauty of it. The cosmic orchestration and the bringing of Mars, the true ruler of Scorpio, into this profound evolutionary process of Eris and Pluto is, in a sense, to bring Mars through an initiation. And then the next thing that happens is Mars moves into Scorpio, where it is for most of your solar return season. There's a lot going on in Scorpio at this time, but they're not the usual kinds of things you can get a lot of mileage out of, for example, like a Pluto aspect, except for the fact that now we definitely can talk about Pluto as and Mars as working together. And let me get to the point here, which is that you have to trust what you want. When you take away all the baggage of Mars and all of the military connotations and the any form of violent connotation of Mars, which there's plenty have been packed onto it and have it's collected over the centuries. Mars in our time is about, what do you want? It's not even about what you need. It's about what you want. And this is, perhaps, the most controversial spiritual topic of all. And Mars is inherently sexual. Scorpio is inherently sexual. Rules the genitals. Cancer rules the breast, Pisces rules the feet, Scorpio rules the genitals. That's how it goes. And the reason that Scorpio is the thing that spooks all the muggles is because of its association with sex and death. And this thing that we know exists called transformation, actual transformation, becoming a different form or an evolved entity of some kind. And Mars has just gone through this, you could think of Pluto Eris as of being this learning process, and look what society has been dragged through the past 2 years. Look what you've been dragged through the past 2 years. I dread to think what some of my clients have been through the past 2 years and what some of you are going through today. And if anything was learned from that, we could say symbolically that Mars picks up the message of this square between Pluto and Eris, which I will interpret more in a moment, and brought it in a portable form right to you, right to Scorpio, to conduct the experiment of honoring your desire. One of the messages we are being beaten with hourly is what you want doesn't matter. It's not your life anymore. Your life belongs to some collective. Yeah. Like Amazon.com? Really? Facebook? That's what that actually means. And yet, to honor your desire implies being a free person. That's the point, that you have influence over what you choose. People can theorize left, right, up the yin-yang, and out the wazoo about free will and all this, but ultimately, one thing we all know is we do get to make decisions. And the basis of your decisions is thing one. And the exploration of what you want never goes perfectly. However, it's still worth doing. And there are points of resistance. And one of the points of resistance that we are in now is this horseshit collectivism that's going on, which is, as far as I'm concerned, no more true than the Coke commercial of all the kids standing on the mountaintop in Italy, which is really a stadium. I think also in Italy, at least that part's accurate. Maybe, who knows? I used to know that. But it was a stadium, not a mountaintop. It's just one scene on the mountaintop singing, "I'd like to buy the world a Coke and give you turtle doves and love and keep peace and coziness and a home and acceptance and multiculturalism, and we're all together standing like soldiers drinking sugar water." That's the nature of the false collectivism that you are going to keep encountering for a while. Who knows? Could be a long while. And that's a fact of the landscape. That's just part of what's going on Earth right now. But no one and no group has a right to come along and say, "Attention all humans, you're now no longer free." But that's what's being done. And it's not going to work for you. You don't believe it. It's not true. It's not legal. It's not honest. It's not fair. It's not anything. But it's not going to work for you because you understand that you have volition and agency and the power to make decisions. And not just for you, but for the people who are close to you, people who need you, your children, your family, your parents if they're alive, your partner, regardless of what may be going on in your important primary relationships. That's a bit of an adventure story, but it's also a bit of a liberation story. We'll come back to that. In the long haul, going back to before Obama was elected, back when W was president, is that who it was? Back when W was president, Pluto entered Capricorn. And that came with huge changes to society, almost time to the minute. And for you, Capricorn in the solar house system is the third house, the third place. And I always think this is just so interesting because the third house is the house of mental process, thinking. It's the house of writing postcards. It's the house of going shopping for food and basic necessities, not for luxuries, but basic commerce. It's the house of your neighborhood. It has some implications related to childhood. So it's the early childhood house of crawling around on the floor and bumping into things, which then translates into the adulthood house or the young adult, then to adult house of, "I think I'll go to the bakery. And now I need to go to the fruit market or the farmer's market." That's a good example of the third house. And you like things a little old-fashioned. Capricorn on the third means this business of going to the market is really important. And when I lived in Europe and there were fantastic markets, like really good markets, open markets, some would be in the same place, some would bounce around and come back every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or whatever it was, I would walk around these markets and see this incredible diversity of stuff that they like, spices and fruits and cloth and pottery and all this stuff that the human experience has given us, all this beautiful stuff that has taken us like 10,000 years. And I would think, this market is the apotheosis of civilization. That's a little Capricorn on the third house. And yet, what Pluto is doing is demolishing that worldwide, or attempting to demolish it worldwide, and turn that beautiful farmer's market in Paris into Amazon.com. Who needs to go to the market on the street when you can just click on something and a drone drops it on your roof or whatever the case may be? And you're having to go through this, and what I would propose is that you do two things, one of which is adapt to the changes of the world, but also honor the traditions that are important to you. And if you are indeed called to do things the old-fashioned way, then do them the old-fashioned way. Pluto in Capricorn is certainly bringing up plenty of the past. It is retrieving many of these professions that date back to the dawn of time. Candlesmiths and butchers and soap makers. Who would have thought? So there is some retrieval of this going on. Though you should know what is going on in total, which is there's this reformation of this all-important thing of how humans acquire cucumbers and cheese. Fromageur, that's a good one. You can do quite well these days as a fromageur. Save all that money sending your kid to Bard College. It's to come to like $250,000. You could set up a hell of a cheese business for $250,000. You could set up a hell of a cheese business for $50,000. It's cheese, for God's sake. So this in turn is driving your concept of what you need to do every day. So the houses involved, where Pluto and Aries are, because Eris is an Aries, and there's a lot more going on in Aries, but that Pluto-Aries contact, Pluto-Eris in Aries contact, is also shaping your notion of what your role in your world is. And you are kind of born to be a pioneer in the area of your work. Your work, more than pioneering, your work has to reflect you. You are not going to be happy doing something that's not true to who you are, that's not your actual dharma. That's Aries on the sixth. Sixth is work, sixth is calling, sixth is your service, and where Aries is in the chart, you must seek yourself, and for you, that's work. That's why Scorpios are so really good workers. And Aries is not the only thing there. The newer entry into the sixth, Aries, is Chiron. And the sixth has a dual role, which is the house of health and well-being, which is closely related to work, because if you're not happy in your work, you're not going to feel very good. And Chiron there is focusing this in what is both an immediate sense and also a very long-term sense, because it's going to be there for at least 5 more years with major activity coming up. Let's get to that. We'll take a little break. This is Vision Quest, featuring Jelko. let's sum up so far. Utterly irrevocable, unprecedented changes happening in the world. Like, nothing anyone who really studies history has ever seen happening before. Massive, large forces at work. Larger than people can conceive of. But your chart is primarily about what you do every day. So this is a real plus, because you have a point of grounding and you are very unlikely to be distracted from your immediate sense of necessity, your sense of what is functional, what works, what gets the job done, and more than anything, your sense of purpose. And while these huge forces have been at work, you have been reevaluating your whole approach. I believe there's a very good chance that you are quite well in step with what's going on, because you've had a lot of time to practice. You, and I think, this is me reading astrology, have an idea that the world is one thing, but your internal map of reality is another thing, and that those can match more or less, right? Your inner map can be more or less accurate, and your inner map can be more or less helpful. And so while the world has been changing, you have been revising your inner map of reality. Capricorn, Pluto, and many other factors now, soon to be Venus in Capricorn. And the whole matter of what you do every day and your independence from corporate structure. You've been long aware of this. Plenty of Scorpios who both work in corporate structure and work in and out of corporate structure, able to adapt both ways. But nonetheless, you understand that there is a need for you to be able to stand apart from the dictates of corporate structure, and also to be able to function effectively within that kind of parallel universe. Okay, I want to talk about the influence of Aquarius in your chart, including the rulers of Aquarius and the themes of Aquarius. And this is going to take us through a few houses of your chart into the important matter of Uranus moving through your opposite sign, Taurus. A rare event, hasn't happened since, I don't know, the 30s, maybe, 1930s, prior to now. So we're all experiencing it for the first time. You have Aquarius in the fourth place, a word I use synonymously with house, the fourth house, but I like place better. In the fourth place, you have Aquarius. And what that suggests is a very strong identification with your family. The fourth is the house of the family. Aquarius is the house of groups. The first group you ever encounter is your family. Family of origin, your immediate surrounding family, grandparents and the cousins, the extended family, the more distant cousins and the more distant grandparents and their sibs and stuff like that. All of that falls under the group factor of Aquarius. One of the challenges of Scorpio is to not over-identify with the family and its requirements. And that, I think, if we're talking about an evolved version of doing that, is either maintaining your independence, and that means making sure everyone knows you're your own person, which there's a fairly good chance that you do, but some people are squashed and their parents still don't know that they're an artist, much less they're like a lesbian or a Republican or whatever it might be. Some people haven't come out about their harmonica playing to their families, but you probably have. They probably know you play the harmonica. But that over-identification with the tribe is, these days, especially an important thing to never take your finger off the pulse of. Because a lot of things are coming along and saying, hi, we're now your tribe. You're going to do what we do, or we're not going to let you eat food. That's when you've got to say, excuse me, what tribe are we talking about? And may I meet the chief? And the medicine man? You have now Saturn, you are Scorpio, Saturn moving through this realm. You've had Jupiter moving through this realm. There was big fireworks last year when Jupiter and Saturn made a conjunction on the winter solstice. So that is not in your solar return chart for 2021. It happens after the sun leaves Scorpio. It happens on the day the sun enters Capricorn. A couple of signs later, the two largest planets make a conjunction in the first degree of Aquarius in your first house. This is big revelation on many levels about the role of the group, the role of all groups, the role of the family, and what's our relationship to these things when we're deciding whether or not we feel safe, because that's one of the functions of the fourth house, is to feel safe. You have Aquarius there. One of the reasons you feel safe is because other people feel safe. There are maybe people committed to helping you who you're committed to helping should you all need to do that. That's a perfect use of Aquarius as a fourth house gift, is cooperation and collaboration. And an understanding things like efficiency of scale. What else Saturn is doing there is kind of compelling a reassessment of all these things for you. So Saturn's journey through Aquarius pretty much spans from March of 20 for a couple of months, and then it comes back in December, and then spans all the way through March of 23. So it's a good 3-year run that we've been getting this, and we're only about halfway done with it, is a clearing process where you are understanding the need to make choices. And that means make choices of who you consider your family, who you consider which kind of family. The world's been on to this family of choice, family of origin thing for a long time, and many people realize their family is not necessarily the people that they grew up with or were raised by, but there's always some homage to pay to those people. There's always, I think, a measure of respect is called for, but so too is a even greater respect for what you choose, and we're back to what you want. One of the hot points of the astrology right now, particularly in your solar return chart, is that Mars is moving through Scorpio, and it is moving through Scorpio about to form a square to Saturn. That's the next square. Mars just made a big square to Pluto and Eris, square opposition. Now it's about to make a square to Saturn in Aquarius. This is a crucial test of your autonomy and your independence, because it's likely to represent some kind of event where you encounter resistance to who you are, not merely what you believe, not merely what people think you believe. That's selling it short. You are your desires. You are the what you define your life to be. And if others resist what you want, they're really resisting you. And so what I'm seeing in this solar return chart, and therefore it could manifest a number of different ways, a number of different times over the next year or two, because solar return chart goes past the current year, is to pay attention to when people are saying, oh, no, you can't be that. We don't accept that about you. We'll accept that about you, but not that about you. Ah, these are your, you might say, self-teaching moments, your self-therapy moments, where it's like, really? I don't think so. I'm still me. And you're you. Let's get used to that. And this is not worth fighting over. It's not worth fighting over. One of the reasons it's not worth fighting over is that the reference point to the discussion of I'm me and you're you is largely an internal reference point. It is part of your inner map of reality. And those people may say something, but ultimately the bottom line is going to be your map of reality. That's what prevails over the circumstances of the world in which you find yourself. And so what I'm proposing here is that as you encounter these situations where people might say something, claim that, you know, your existence is inappropriate or your choices are inappropriate or how you raise your children is inappropriate in their mind, rather than slug it out with them, it's much more energy efficient and reflective of reality to adjust your inner map and say, I'm going to move that there. And, you know, in my world, that's not how we treat each other. And then you can move on or, you know, visit them on a holiday. But, and the same holds true for family of choice. Now, one of the most kind of tragic and impressive things going on right now is people who were friends with people for many years, trusted them, relied on them, are now throwing their friends under the bus, excluding them from parties, holiday dinner table, because they vary in some what ultimately is an irrelevant opinion. Whew. There is a lot of love being lost right now. And one of the cudgels being used is acceptance. You will not be accepted. If you don't do that thing, you will not be accepted. And this only has so much of a natural life. There's only so much of that someone can stand. No matter how little they care about their individuality, whatever it might be. Maybe they never went to therapy once in their entire life. So there's only so much you can be told externally what's right for you. But get used to that discussion. Get used to that, this long experiment in evaluating other people's opinions about you. And anyone pretending to be the world's biggest expert on you. So we've got Saturn working the fourth, which is essentially rearranging, clearing space, ironing out, helping you sort out all of these matters of security, groups, and family, all in one concept. At the same time, Mars is making a square to a point called Varuna. I have not mentioned this in any while. Varuna was discovered in 2000. It was a big deal when it was discovered. It was such a big deal that they gave it the number 20,000, the minor planet number 20,000, to match its discovery year 2000. So you know the astronomers are saying something is an important discovery when they give it an honorific as its number. By the way, 10,000 was reserved for Pluto, but not given to it for some reason. I don't understand. When Pluto was made a minor planet. Varuna is about equality. Varuna is about the formerly seemingly mighty and powerful actually just being kind of ordinary. And with Mars square Pluto, the reminder is to only take authority from on high so seriously. Obviously, file your taxes, pay your parking tickets. Okay, great. You don't want to have your registration suspended for a $10 parking ticket. That makes sense. But I'm talking about the other kind of authority from on high, where someone like a head of state announces that they're the God Emperor. That was ancient Egypt, an Aztec civilization, and like science fiction. At the same time, the reminder of Varuna in your 10th is work with authority that you have, what is vested in you, with an even hand, and recognizing that even though you may be the executive vice president or the chief financial officer, that everybody pushing a broom or assembling a chair or answering the phone is on some level your equal. To never convince yourself that whatever you have makes you better than whatever someone else has. Okay, a couple of more points on this tour of the fixed signs. I'm talking about Scorpio, Aquarius, now Varuna in Leo, your 10th place, authority, parental authority in particular, governmental authority, recognition, fame. Right? This is a be modest about your achievements time in your life story. The next one, apropos of Aquarius and these kinds of changes, is Uranus in Taurus, your 7th house. So I'm not, you know, again, I don't really use modern rulers so much, and I prefer to think of, Aquarius as being ruled by Saturn. It really is. But there's an undeniable connection between Aquarius and Uranus. And in this chart that I'm working with, it's an important one. Uranus entered your 7th house, Taurus, 7th solar house, 7th place, Taurus, in 2018. What Uranus tends to do is disrupt what is stable. You have Taurus on the 7th. You want stable, long-term relationships. Whatever else you may do, whatever, however saucy you are, polyamorous you are or not, bottom line is you want your primary partnerships to be solid. But with Uranus in Taurus, they might not seem so solid. You may find people are being flaky. You may find that commitments that were essential, dependable commitments suddenly are now subject to this like strange force that's taken over the world. And this goes back to 2018, by the way, another very tumultuous year where there were many disruptions. It was the kind of the whispering of things to come. And this is a crucial factor of your environment that you need to adapt to, because it indicates that the kinds of extremely stable, dependable Taurian, right? These are the people. My joke with Taurus is every Taurus I ever met still lives in the same place they lived when I met them. This is getting old because some of them still live there 30 years later. And I once made a joke of 37 years, and a Taurus said, oh, I just moved out of my house of 37 years. Anyway, there's a shakeup going on in your relationships, but also in anything you think is stable or should be stable or that has been stable, you're getting shaken up. And now Mars is coming through, and Mars is going to dance around all these points. It's going to square Varuna. It's going to square Saturn. It's going to oppose Uranus. Remember, now, finally, it's easy to see, if you're honest, that you're the thing driving the changes. What you want matters. Okay, so what that says is, well, you want something, someone else doesn't want that something. Okay, you got to go somewhere else. You can't get the thing that is not available from the place that's not available. But that doesn't change what you want. It is presenting you with opportunities to experiment with different things that you might then decide that you want. That's a good idea, to have a kind of a refreshing force. And remember, you're a fixed sign. You're influenced by all the other fixed signs. And now, finally, approximately over the last 3 to 4 years, there is suddenly all of this activity that is shaking the fixed signs loose. And things that seem like they could never possibly change are changing. That's a fact of your environment, and that is something you can absolutely get working for you. There are two main themes I'd like to close with. The first one involves the whole concept of wellness. The reason that this is such a prominent feature in your chart is the presence of Aries on your sixth house. And we talked about that as relates to work. But with Aries on the sixth, that drive and determination to be your own individual is equally applicable to what you have discovered and are in ongoing process of learning is the healthiest thing for you to do and to be. What is the way to live that actually facilitates your wellness? And society loves to give us these one-size-fits-all things and the ongoing joke of the diet of the year and all this stuff. And people are not figuring out this is all marketing. It has nothing to do with actually losing weight. It's just selling people the idea of losing weight, and then what's the newest health trend that will lead to immortality. It's been vitamin C, vitamin D, coenzyme Q10, super blue green algae, and so on and so on and so on. You have your own set of necessities, and your perception, and this is about what is right for you health-wise, and this is essential to your process of self-actualization. There can be no fixes that work for everyone that also work for you, except for, like, is there enough oxygen? And frankly, people have shown an uncanny willingness to give up their right to breathe. I will never understand that. You have Chiron moving through your sixth house now. So this has many different inflections, including your own quest for wellness and healing, which, by the way, must extend to your workplace, being something that you are taking on as a kind of a dharmic challenge to learn how to genuinely assist others in their similar quest for wellness and for healing. But when Chiron's in your sixth, the healing is really about you, first and foremost, particularly in Aries. And what you learn, you teach, and what you learn, others benefit from, and all that stuff, that's never going to change. But now we can see there's a genuine question of what works for you and what helps for you. And one of the ancient teachings of medicine is that what has the power to heal also has the power to injure. And it is only a huckster who would say otherwise. And so it is vital that you remember the two-edged nature of anything that is said to be of assistance to you and to those to whom you are responsible, particularly your family. And to do your own inconvenient, deep dives into what the right thing to do is. I don't think there should be any limit to how carefully you are willing to evaluate what is right for you when you perceive a need of some kind. And the first thing to question is whether you really even have that need, whether that even really is relevant. That's the first challenge. Is do you personally feel that you have some need of healing? Someone can't come along and say, well, you really got to heal that relationship with someone, or take a look at you, you know, unless they're a 100-year-old Chinese doctor, and say, you know, you don't have enough, whatever. And this issue is going to keep getting pushed, because Chiron has got quite a few years left in Aries, and in 25 and 26, its journey culminates with a conjunction to Eris in Aries, which is in itself a kind of a destabilizing factor on almost any matter of personal health, particularly psychological health, but there's a very close association between psychological and psychic health and physical health. The answer to almost any question is, what's this got to do with digital technology? What's this got to do with electricity? Because those are the conditions that are affecting everyone's psychology, spiritual health, and physical health more than anything. And part of the way they're doing that is they are distorting our relationships to our bodies. And your challenge is, with Chiron and Aries, is to reestablish your relationship to your body in a way that is actually sane and relevant, and that is not being dictated to you by some mysterious voice coming out of a box. Fortunately, for a while, you have an edge here. The edge is, the advantage, is that Chiron is in a sextile to Saturn. This is not going to last long. It has been lingering around for a while, but it's about to, focus in its strongest form. Sextile aspects. Saturn. Let's get a look at the exact date. I was marveling at this, eating my eggs in the diner this morning. Chiron, sextile, Saturn. And the next and last sextile is just after the sign enters Sagittarius. So that means that all during your solar return season, it is forming, and it is one of the most important aspects in your solar return chart. Even though it's exact slightly after sun leaves your sign, it is still in full force and effect for every solar return chart, including custom cast by astrologers in Paris for $500. It's in every Scorpio solar return chart. And therefore, you got an asset here. And the asset that I see is your, the advancing of your maturity to the degree where you can hold your own in any conversation with anyone about something that affects you, your health, or that of your family. And it is also essential that you bring your Scorpio superpower, the indomitable will side of Scorpio, and not the like, I don't want to ruffle any feathers, I just think I might shut up. This is not the time. Particularly given that a lot of things going around called beneficial to health are irreversible. And look, they might be perfect and health-inducing. They might not be. But whether they are or whether they're not, the question is, can I undo this? The answer is no, then really calls for going back to the evaluation of, is this helpful? Is this harmful? Does this pertain to a real problem? Do I need this? Do my children need this? What's the other side of the story here? What is it? And so what I'm saying here is, without putting too sharp of a point on it, or quote-unquote getting political, which I am not. I couldn't give a flying fuck about politics, but I care deeply about the health of the people who come to me for astrological guidance, because that's what I do. That's the whole point. There would be no other. I care. And Chiron in your sixth is a serious message of make real decisions, informed decisions, agonizing if necessary, that take years if necessary. You make those decisions for real. And if something is not actually, imminently, life-threatening, then there is no need to make a decision now, particularly if the decision is irreversible. And if you flip on some box and someone comes screaming out of that box and says, "You're dying!" Turn it off. Get back to business or work or eating healthy food. Welcome to challenge me on this. I'd be happy to provide additional information. EFC at ChironReturn.org. Next case. The group theme of Aquarius all over your chart. You're born with it. Aquarius on the fourth. Strong family emphasis. Saturn in Aquarius. Big deal. Jupiter in Aquarius. Big deal. About to go into the fifth. We'll talk about that. We'll end with that. We'll end with dessert. The nice, juicy part of this all. Because I know I'm being a serious dude here. Uranus in the seventh. Very important. Function of Aquarius. Disruption in relationships. But also the introduction of weird, quirky people. Uranus in the seventh. Of outliers. Of those who might look like one thing, and then you might be wrong in your initial judgment of them and realize, oh my God, this person actually knows something. This person actually has something to offer. They're not such a weirdo. Whatever. Another function of Aquarius, but also the presence of new groups. Important function of Aquarius, and one of the things that argues for a relationship between Uranus and Aquarius is the group idea. That concept. Very general, but frequently seen concept of groups. Here is the what I think of as the bottom line on that. There's a rare, rarely used hypothetical point moving through your sign called Apollon. Most astrologers do not use the hypotheticals. I've studied them since like the first 15 minutes that I was an astrologer or astrology student. So while I don't talk about them much, the hypotheticals go into every chart, not all of them, but some of them. And I'm interested in them, and you got a big one in your sign. It's going to be there for a long friggin' time, like a century or something. I don't know how, 50, 75 years, whatever, something like that. So it's a full presence. And that is about you being the center of groups, you being the person who invites the group, you strike up the band, you become the founder of the new family. You become the patriarch or matriarch of the new, let's say, informal family system or family of choice system. Or if you're not in a leadership position, you are the point of gathering. You are the one who says, let's get together. We got something to talk about here. Or let's get together and eat food. Or let's get together and dance. Or let's get together and make music. But you're the person who says, let's get together. It's time to get together. Let's go. What are we waiting for? Rather than waiting for others to do it, because others are not very dependable about this and don't think they can initiate anything and start anything, and you don't have that problem. You know that you're as qualified as the next Tom, Dick, Harry, or Susie, Jane, or Nancy to do something relevant and original. It's almost a joke. You're competent, you're qualified, and when you're motivated, you're motivated. Nothing's going to stop you. And now's the time to get motivated. You probably are motivated. You've got Mars going through your sign right now. That is motivation incarnate. You have Mars going through your sign, and you've been cautioned that Mars is going to make a series of aspects, all of which are going to take you through some involvement with groups. The square to Saturn. Ooh, that's like bumping into things that are like, oh, you can't do that. Oh, well, go try to stop me. Mars opposite Uranus. Again, individual and the group. Mars square Varuna. That's the individual versus the authority complex and authority structure. You're still moving along. You're still Mars. You still want what you want, need what you need, and are determined to do what you're determined to do. Remember, it's your life. It's your dharma. You got a calling. You are absolutely capable of knowing right from wrong. Scorpio is intelligent. This is some deep stuff. It's not smart. Scorpio has a profound psychological perceptiveness, first of all. This is like the genius gift of Scorpio, why everyone should have a couple in their life to say, what do you think of that person? Just like introduce them, take them out to lunch. Scorpio says, I'm not so sure. Like, you shouldn't be so sure either. So you have perceptiveness, and you like it. You like psyching people out. So don't get fooled, but also remember that you are very likely to be the most reliable, dependable leader, including ideological leader, as long as you have evaluated and you know that you're not swindled. You know that you're not bamboozled. Everyone's got to be checking this right now. Everyone has to be checking their facts and looking for at least two or three other sides of the story and not assuming that you know them till you can explain them to a 9-year-old or argue them effectively. Because then you don't know what you don't know, but you got to find out what you didn't know. And the only way you know that you know it is that you can explain it to someone and they understand it and they get the point. Trial lawyers understand this. You got to explain things to the jury. The jury is not experts. That's the beauty of the American jury system, is you have to convince ordinary folks who are not clouded by expertise. And with Varuna in your 10th, remember, very often experts are complete idiots. They're blinded by their own expertise. Half of them, you know... Did they pay people to take their classes? Were they paying attention? Do they even really care? That's important. So, you are qualified to evaluate any and every expert statement made. Get busy doing it. Please, I implore you, do not take people's word for things. Check yourself. Make your own decision. Have a thick folder for every important topic. Okay. Let's briefly consider the Pisces-Virgo axis. This is kind of for dessert. One thing I'm noticing here while I'm, you know, ranting about your the world's need for your leadership on matters of profound and life and death importance. You have Virgo on the 11th house. So that's cool. What that's saying is that you have it in you to be lit, like when you meet someone or you know someone even casually, you know, a friend introduces you to a friend or you're talking to a friend or you're at a party, you're at a dinner party. You're interested in what's up with people. And not only for the sake of, you know, collecting information, but because it's probable that you have the ability to help. What one of those hypotheticals moving through Virgo is called Trans-Pluto. It only partly involved with Pluto, but it doesn't exist. It's a figment of mathematics, but it's there, and it's been there for a while. It's going to be there for a longer while. You must be specific in who you help. And I would imagine that like at least 2/3 to 3/4 or more of the time, you're going to be like, this is not my case. This is not my case. This is not my case. I know somebody who can help you. I know the perfect homeopath, chiropractor, herbalist, whatever it might be. But there will be specific cases where the bell goes off, spirit whispers to you, take care of this person. Do what you can. Course in Miracles gives good guidance on when to help. When you know helping will harm neither of you, that's when to help. Not about resources or all that. That's all taken care of. But if you've evaluated the situation and you know this is not going to hurt anybody, there you go. And this, by the way, is a crucial standard to hold anyone who holds himself out to be a helper in any way. There must be an evaluation of collateral damage or completely fucking up. When you refer someone to someone, it is essential that you take full responsibility for the referral. That's tough. You really got to trust somebody. But if you gain experience and you use your own experience and you step out of any biases that you might have, you will find there are people who have been 100% reliable, and that you send a person to them and you evaluate what happened and that worked out. You can refer people with confidence. You still have to take responsibility. The karma is still on you. Speaking of karma, Alice Bailey said that the fifth house is the house of esoteric karma. No, Bailey didn't say this. Sorry, it was Isabel Hickey, a voracious reader of Bailey. I do not know where Hickey got this reference from. I think that's somebody I can ask, but now that I think of it. But it's one of these things that's always stuck with me. The fifth house of Scorpio is Pisces. Pisces is a busy place right now. The fifth house is supposed to be like one of the very best creative houses, the house of fun and the passion of small children and art and skiing and bungee jumping and rock and roll and sex, because it's a sexy house and you've got Pisces there. It's the cuddly, passionate side of who you are. And this is a busy place. And one, it's about to get busier. And one thing it's busy with is a rare conjunction that deserves more amplitude: Pallas conjunct Nessus. That is cautionary. This brings up the esoteric meaning veiled karma of the fifth, which is saying that beware of any situation where one thing can lead to another, to another, to another. So this is really about understanding the law of unintended consequences and working with that. We all need the fifth house to play in. We all need that. We all need that space. I need to smoke pot and turn up the amp a couple of nights a week. That's the fifth house, right? I'm free. I've got my guitar in my hands. Nobody's telling me what to do. It's purely for creative fun and pleasure. I've got my box of pencils and crayons and pastels on my desk. Fifth house. When I'm in the middle of the sixth house and I'm like in the middle of this kind of like three-ring circus of organizing contractors and production schedules, I think I'll open up my sketchbook and just turn this page blue and orange. Fifth house, very important, but it's dangerous territory right now. Diversions, things done for pleasure, must be scrutinized and evaluated carefully, particularly for their political content. I'm not sure I can explain this in a short time, more like a TED talk, but you know things have political content when there is the question of power being waged. So this is the date from 1990 that turns into the power struggle in 2020 for no reason. So it is essential to understand who has power and what kind of power and what potential kind of power. And that includes the power to lie, because that's a Pisces thing, particularly with Neptune in Pisces, is the ability to distort, obfuscate, warp, and to generally fabricate out of whole cloth. And one problem the world has right now is how powerless people feel, and therefore how many people are desperately grasping at anything that can make them feel powerful. Not be powerful, not be creative, just to screw people up. The other thing about Nessus Palace in the fifth is that it's not very fifth house. The fifth is, my example of the fifth is the sex you have on the art studio couch. That's like carefree, right? It's like, but when you get Palace and Nessus in there, it is essential to watch for people's agendas. And it is particularly important to watch for people's agendas where there is any mind-altering substance of any kind whatsoever, including a glass of wine, involved. In a little while, at the end of the year, Jupiter is going to arrive in your fifth, in Pisces. It is not in your solar return chart, but the imminence of it is, and it dipped in for a while last year, and it's happening, and it's coming, and what the likely effect is going to be is a magnification of the kinds of things that I'm talking about. And that means to be very careful evaluating the truth of people's statements and also being keenly sensitive to something that might be politicized. So we're used to, for example, every discussion of sex in the entire world always coming down to someone's rights and someone's being wronged and who's got, where the budget is going and who's passing what law and who's making what speech correct and incorrect on that particular day, and then it's going to change the next day. Don't miss the memo. That's not fun. That's not got anything to do with sex. That's a power trip imposed on people's insecurities. They're searching, they're questioning, but the power aspect tends to be exacerbated by the extent to which people tend to feel like they have none, and therefore are all too willing in too many instances to grasp at anything that they possibly can. And Jupiter going through your fifth is normally, as Bob Dylan said, I like my sugar sweet. So be selective of who you associate with, who you have your fun with. There's a lot of ordinary things that are going underground, and I think, frankly, need to go underground because we need to end the exploitation of those things, and we need to bring back the celebration of those things and a sense of play and creative experimentation. And so you're going to be drawn in this direction. It's the most natural thing in the world. Beware of people's agendas. Beware of anyone who starts talking about rights and laws and budgets when you're talking about, I don't know, rock and roll or sex and drugs or whatever it might be. Whatever your form of sex, drugs, and rock and roll is, including your paints and your whatever, tango lessons. Okay? You remain a free being. You have my full endorsement. As such, have an absolutely blessed year. Questions may come back to me at efc@chironreturn.org. Lots of love, and bye for now.